Good afternoon, and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. My name is Scott, and I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Sri Devi, who is here to speak with us about practicing with the Big Bamboozle in this 15th annual Bridge Walk season. Welcome, Sri Devi.
Hi, Scott. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. So we got to hear a bit on last week's Good News Update with the launch of this year's Bridge Walk campaign, the Teacup Challenge, about how the Big Bamboozle is incorporated into this year's Bridge Walk season. And I wonder, Sri Devi, if you could walk us through the details of that and maybe tell us how you plan to work with it in your own practice.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you guys heard last week, we are working with the Big Bamboozle, and there will be newsletters sent out every week. In fact, I think the first assignment went out today about what we're looking at. And the encouragement is to work with that assignment for the week. And then on top of that, to use either being when you catch the con artist who's trying to bamboozle you, or you notice that you've been bamboozled, to use that as an opportunity to offer something to the Africa Project as a fundraiser. And so what I decided to do in approaching this was to take, I think, the very first newsletter that was sent out that I think came out on Sunday that lays out the various steps of the challenge. And I literally copied and pasted it from the newsletter into a document. And I started going, how am I going to look, and created kind of actually a practice plan of how am I going to look at each one of these sections. So, for example, the first one was select your teacup. So I immediately thought of what teacup would I select. And I happen to have a teacup that doesn't get used very often, but I love, which is a teacup with Winnie the Pooh on it. And I actually thought it would be the best teacup because I project that Winnie the Pooh has just my experience of reading, you know, or watching those cartoons or reading anything story about Winnie the Pooh was the unconditional love that he has. So I was like, okay, well, that's going to be a perfect one to start the challenge with, my Winnie the Pooh.
That is perfect. Yeah, and I love kind of what you're saying, which is, well, let's get a plan together, and we have all the support. You know, you likely got something in your inbox today giving us the assignment for the week. And so the first step is to find your teacup, and that can be a lot of fun, right, as you just described with finding Winnie the Pooh teacup, the unconditional love. I love that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that to me, I mean, again, this is, I think, for me, is about fun and joy and practice, which has just inherent joy within it. So the second step was to practice emptying your teacup. So what I decided to do was every week when we get the newsletter with the assignment, I'm going to record the assignment, and then I'm going to pick two times a day and set a timer that goes off where I listen to the recording of the assignment that morning. And then use that as an opportunity to check in to see what's been going on. And I'll tell you a really fun story. This morning I got the assignment, and I was eating lunch, and I started going into the world of ego-centered karmic conditioning / self-hate around comparison, and I immediately caught it. And I don't think I've had more joy catching a bamboozle as I did today.
Wow.
Simply because the next step is the encouragement is, how would you, every time you catch a bamboozle or you've been bamboozled and you see that you've been bamboozled, what would you like to offer to the project? So I have a goal that I'm setting. And so I was like, oh, yes, I caught it. I get to put something in my teacup. And it was just really exciting to catch it.
It is. It's so exciting. So let me just see if I'm with you. So the second step is emptying the teacup. And so the way you're working with that is the assignment comes in and you record it. And then you said twice a day an alarm goes off. Was that right? And then that kind of reminds you of the assignment, which this week and this month has been around comparison. I think we're in assignment 4. And you were sitting there eating your lunch. And I can, you know, we can only project that because you kind of set yourself up like this. You know, you record the assignment, you've got the alarms going off, that it's kind of floating around in your awareness. And then there you catch it. You caught the comparison bamboozle. And then, of course, it's so fun because we're doing this campaign and you got to make a donation based on that.
Yes, yeah. And I just, what was great about it was not only does it allow me to get to support the Africa Project, but because there's so much fun in catching it, which I think before I would get caught in the bamboozles and there would be a lot of beating from conditioning afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, of course,
yeah.
It sets you up and then it beats you up afterwards. There was no beating because there was such a great outcome because it means I get to contribute to the Africa Project. I was like, yes, I caught it and I get to contribute. And it was a really fun experience today to watch that process.
Boy, that's such a good point, because what we're donating for is every time we come to conscious compassion and awareness. And every time we notice something like a bamboozle, we're coming to conscious compassion and awareness. Now, conditioning would love to use that as an opportunity to say, well, gosh, you got bamboozled again. But we're really just kind of turning that around. And so it's awesome for the project, right? So we're doing this campaign. And it's really great for the practitioner. All of a sudden, there's kind of this excitement. Oh, I caught it. Oh, great. Now I get to go make the donation.
Yeah.
Right.
And
so
the other thing that I was watching that I was really enjoying about working with the bamboozle in this way is that when I was looking at comparison and I saw it come up and I saw what the voices were saying, I dropped it. And what I'm noticing is as soon as it's coming up, because it came up again, you know, at different times throughout the day, I just wasn't allowing myself to go there. Like there was such this focus on this for this week and this assignment that it really allowed me to go, nope, not going there, nope, not going there, and just how supportive that is in the practice of just not allowing those voices to take me there.
Mm. Boy, that's fun. It kind of just really calls forth the importance of what we're doing in this waking up process. And so you're just not going to go there when those voices start in. You're just simply not going to go there.
Yeah, yeah. And so you know, you set up what your practice is and how you're going to empty your teacup. And then the third part was decide, you know, if you, however you want to work with it. For me, it's every time I catch it or I realize I've been caught up in it, is to make an offering and put it in the teacup. And then the fourth part is inviting friends and family. So I'm also very excited about this, is that I've set a goal for myself of how many times, hopefully more than this, but at least how many times I want to catch the bamboozle through these next 15 weeks of the campaign. And I'm asking friends and family, I'm letting them know what I'm doing, and I'm sharing my goal with them and asking them that if I make my match and catch the bamboozle this number of times, if they would be willing to donate a certain amount of money towards the project.
That's so great. So you're going to set a goal about how many times you're going to catch or thwart the bamboozle, and then ask family and friends. And people love to do this, don't they? Like, when they know there's something good going on and it's making a difference, they often want to contribute. You know, obviously they might support us because we're their friend or their family, but often people want to participate. They want to share. They just don't know where's a good place to put the money. So if you're doing something and you're lit up about it, as you clearly are, boy, that's going to be so fun for other folks, family and friends, to join in and maybe match the donation that you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's so great is it's not only saying this is a project that, you know, I obviously have a lot of excitement about and a lot of belief in the work in Cantalompa, but it's so great that it's connected to the experience of conscious compassionate awareness, that what you're sharing with your family and friends is, I'm working on being present, I'm working on being here, I'm working towards kindness and love. And what a wonderful thing to be sharing with your family and friends, and that they can support you in, because I project a lot of my family and friends have seen those moments where, you know, egocentric karma conditioning / self-hate is not too nice to me. And they see what it happens, and they've had that experience. So I think what they have the opportunity to do is get to support this practice and this experience of me getting, you know, coming back to center on a very, very hopefully regular basis.
Boy, that really brings us to the big picture, doesn't it? So what we're doing here is we're practicing presence. You know, we're practicing love and kindness, and to be able to talk to our friends and family about that. You know, I'm practicing conscious compassion awareness. This is what this looks like. And for them to be a part of that, boy, what a gift.
Yeah, it is a gift. It is a gift. And to create, again, we have this incredible support with Sangha, and now we get to ask our family and friends to come into that support circle of practicing in this way.
Yes, Yes, just to be welcoming and including everyone who wants to be a part of this. Boy, and once, you know, and once we get involved, you know, and again, that kind of excitement that I can hear in your voice, people get interested. Wait, what are you doing? You know, tell me more about it. I want to be a part of it. So that's kind of how we can go about it, is to kind of to be that presence, to be that loving kindness. And I bet you a lot of people are going to want to join in on this.
I hope so. And just one more note, as a Sangha, we are working towards, because it's the 15th anniversary and we're doing this over 15 weeks, we're working towards 15,000 instances of conscious, compassionate awareness.
I just get so excited. I heard that last week, but I just got really excited again. 15,000 times of conscious, compassionate awareness. Mm. Wow.
Yeah, and actually just hearing that said back and reflected back, I got some chills, because I just am thinking there's 15,000 times that people that we're working towards just kindness and awareness and compassion, and how wonderful in the next 15 weeks to think about that's what we're doing, you know, that all across the Sangha, all across the world, that we're practicing it, and there are these moments that are happening. And I think that's I think, of course, as you can tell, I'm very lit up. I think the campaign is very exciting, and I'm really excited for all of us as a Sangha to be able to participate in this way.
Yeah, I love it. Conscious, compassionate awareness across the Sangha and across the world. That's our focus for the next 15 weeks. Mm-hmm. Well, Sridevi, I see that we're at the top of the hour. Is there anything else that you wanted to share before we turn it over to Michael and Sherry?
No, not at all. Just, you know, keep your eyes open for those weekly newsletters, and I encourage everyone today and tomorrow to go pick your teacup.
Great, great. Thanks, Sridevi.
Thank you so much.
And we'll turn it over to you, Michael.
Wonderful. Thank you, Scott, and thank you, Sridevi. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
Are you grinning so big that there's a danger you're going to hurt your face?
Yeah, I know that feeling, definitely.
Oh,
yes,
my gosh.
I have a teacup already. And
you do? You do?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah,
you have your teacup already?
Yes. Yes, and we're using it.
I'm so envious. I just love the way Sridevi laid that out. That was so beautiful. I am, well, you know, if I concerned myself with these things, I would have something going about this. It never occurred to me to record the assignment for the week.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's good.
Yes. It never occurred to me. As soon as this show is over, I'm going to be doing that. I loved getting that assignment today, and you know, and there you are, just like she said. You know, all right, now we're not walking around little lambs to the slaughter, right? We are on the hunt, right? And every time we catch this stuff, then we get to celebrate. And just as she said, you know, that moment where conditioning, those voices want to come in and make you feel bad, because you just had an unfortunate moment with it. Instead, you're celebrating. Oh, yay! Oh, yay! I get to add this to my teacup. Oh, goody, 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 goody. I think it is one of the best things that has ever, ever happened to us. Mm-hmm. Very exciting. And I am envious that you have your teacup, and you inspire me. By the end of day tomorrow, I will have my teacup. At first I thought, well, you know, it's going to need to be so big. I'm going to have to make one. And then that seemed difficult. Ashwini, I was telling her my problems, and she suggested that it would be possible to, say, write it down instead of, you know, having to put massive amounts of money, which I figure is in my future, into this cup, because it wouldn't hold, and then it's going to overflow and all that. And so now I can keep track in this new, smaller way, still keeping a big track, but with small little numbers on something. So I'm heartened about that. But by end of day tomorrow, I shall have my teacup. I'm a little envious of Sri Devi with her poo cup. I confess that too. But I'm working on those things, and of course that can all go in the teacup. So there's really no loss.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. No way to lose. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah. Hey, Michael, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you good.
Okay, I just got a text from, I will tell you that there are some people in North Carolina at a retreat, and they have decided to join us for open air tonight. And I just
Wonderful.
Got a little text saying that they're having trouble hearing me.
Interesting.
Usually, you know, that's not a problem. I might get information that I'm a little too loud, but not that people have trouble hearing me. So you can't turn us up any, can you, Michael? Do you have that ability?
Not that I'm aware
no?
of.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll just have to do our best.
Well, I have one button here that is turning up higher, and they can report into you and let you know if that helps.
All right. I already got a much better. So maybe our intention did it.
There we go.
So anyway, welcome to those folks in North Carolina on retreat. We're very, very happy to have you with us. We're very, very happy that you're on retreat. It's one of, you know, it's one
yes.
of our favorite things, right? Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Great. Great.
Oh,
and I have some announcements here.
Oh, good.
Yes. Virtual meditation groups are a unique way to enjoy the support and connection of meditating with Sangha. These conference call meditation sessions include a 30-minute sit and a reading from one of your books, Sherry. And for a full schedule, please visit the virtual meditation group webpage.
And I think we heard, wasn't it from Anne last week, how much she enjoys those? It was very fun to hear that. She doesn't miss them unless she has to. She tries to attend everyone she can. So that's very fun. And because with that, in theory, I suppose, a person could sit with folks every day. You know, if you have a local sitting group, you often can only sit with them once a week. So this way, you can sit with folks a lot more often than that. So that's fun.
Yes, it's great. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
The There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat, October 1st through 8th, offers an opportunity to do the compassionate and courageous work of freeing oneself from the ravages of conditioning and self-hate. This foundational retreat at the beautiful Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murphy's, California, is perfect for beginners and experienced practitioners alike.
It sure is.
Sure is.
It's a very, very good thing.
Yes.
And if somebody came to that, even if they came from a long ways away, they could stay around and go with us to the bridge walk, which is the next weekend, I think. Sounds like.
Yes, and that's my next announcement.
Oh, that's your next announcement. See how I am? Oh, dear.
Right on cue. Join Sangha for fun, connection, and contribution at the 15th Annual Golden Gate Bridge Walk in San Francisco, California, on October 15th. The Bridge Walk is fundraiser.
October 15th. Well, that's just so good. Yeah, October 15th for the 15th annual. Do we plan these things, or are we just divinely guided and protected and cared for? That's great. Okay, sorry.
Yes,
go ahead.
Yes. The Bridge Walk is a fundraiser and a celebration of the Africa Vulnerable Children Project.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And for these and all other opportunities, go to schedule.livingcompassion.org.
Mm-hmm. So much good stuff here, coming up, huh?
A lot of good stuff coming up, always,
mm-hmm.
which is
mm-hmm.
great. Keeps us engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And if you'd like to talk with Sherry today, you can make that show by pressing *6 and then 1. And focus on one topic, please, and about 5 minutes is great. Okay, you ready, Sherry?
I'm ready.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Patty from Los Angeles.
Well, hello, Patty.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Hey. Good. How are you?
Really well. Thank you. Kind of lit up, kind of beside myself lit up, as a matter of fact.
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm
tell
glad
me what's going
that I,
on.
Yeah, I'm glad I got on tonight. So I had foot surgery about 3 months ago. And there's been all sorts of practice opportunities with that, just tons of them. But the thing that I wanted to ask you about tonight has to do with specifically with the process of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's come up in a number of different areas, but the one that's really kind of intense right now is with swimming. And so I took up swimming about a year and a half ago, and I really enjoy it. And just recently, the last three times that I've gone swimming, I've gotten some cramps in my toes. And I really think that it's happening because I just started walking without crutches like a week ago. So that foot, the one that's where the toes are cramping, that one is getting so much more use right now than it has been in the last 3 months. And it's that whole leg is like really wonky right now. There's just all sorts of sensation and there's a lot going on there. So my theory is that these cramps that I'm getting in the pool are coming because of that. But what happens is there's just so much fear that arises around this phenomenon, and that also I think is linked to the fact that when I was about 10 or 11, I had a really bad leg cramp in the pool, and it was very upsetting. You know, I mean, I was okay, but I had to kind of like scramble to get to safety. And I really didn't, after that, like I was not into swimming at all. I thought that I didn't like it. And now I'm starting to think, well, maybe it wasn't that I didn't like it, but that I was scared of it. Because the level of fear that's coming up right now over these toe cramps is like, it's enormous. So I've been working with my coach on this. I've been process mapping it, I read the fear book again, and I'm seeing a lot about how the process is happening, but it's still happening, and it's still really intense.
So tell me a little bit about the process of it. So you're going to go swimming tomorrow, and what happens?
Well, I get a little low-level dread when I think about that.
And where does that, how do you know it's dread? Where does that live?
Kind of like in the solar plexus area, like stomach area.
Tightness, heaviness,
Okay.
A little bit of, and, like, butterflies in the stomach.
Uh-huh. And are you aware of voices, or is it just that you know that that means, uh-oh, not good?
Well, I'm aware of the voices some of the time. And
uh-huh.
I'm aware of them very acutely when I'm in the pool, when I'm actually like in the water and I'm swimming. And they're saying, your toe's going to cramp. Your toe's going to cramp. You know, like,
yeah.
it's like just constantly telling me something bad is going to happen.
Yeah.
And in fact,
so in other words, Patty, in other words, you have no confusion about what's going on.
Right. Right.
All right. Okay, good. Go ahead. Last time.
The last time I went, I actually brought my husband along for some moral support. And
to jump in and save you if need be.
Exactly.
Right?
I
yeah.
There's a lifeguard there, too. Like, you know, but.
Yeah. But he's not going to be as attentive as your husband is. Or
exactly.
She is not going to be as attentive. Yeah. Okay.
Right. So he was there with me, and it was great. It was a great workshop because we would do a lap and then we would talk about what the sensations were and what the stories were and what the voices were saying, and you know, he would just reassure me that it's just sensation, and you know, I mean, it was great. Like, you know, he was like a great coach through all of this.
Well, he is a keeper, isn't he, Patty?
He is. He definitely is. And
I
heard the voices saying, like, you feel good now because he's here, but the next time you come, he's not going to be with you.
Wow. So it's just self-hate on steroids, as we say, right? It is just ego at its very most hateful, vicious, worst.
That's right. But here's what is so challenging for me, Sherry, is that the physical sensations that come up are so intense. The heart pounding, shortness of breath, which is even scarier in water than it is on land. And I'll start shivering, like my whole body will start shivering,
mm-hmm.
and my teeth
mm-hmm.
will chatter. And it's a
mm-hmm.
whole body experience where
mm-hmm.
I know it's conditioning that's making this happen, but my whole body's taken over, and it's really, I don't know what
mm-hmm.
to do at that point.
Okay, but Patty, I do.
Okay, good.
Isn't that good? Isn't that good? And you know what? You do too, okay? You do. It's just that when it gets this, life and death, right? We are meant to cave. I mean, you're not supposed to be even hanging in this long, right? You should
right.
have quit ages ago. You should have become a cripple by now, right? You should have been sitting in a chair in your living room hating life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? You've watched
yeah.
that process all along, right? Just trying to, doing everything to talk you into being incapacitated, disabled, and your life is over. And that's the whole conversation. Is this true?
Yep.
Yeah. That's what it's going for. Now, that's what it's going for everybody all the time, right? As you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is you're not doing what you're supposed to do. You're not going along with the program. Something big happened to you, and you didn't just roll over.
Mm-hmm.
You are choosing to get through it. So we did this, I wish you can't see my hands, but they're very effective right now in showing you exactly what I mean. So I'll try to talk about it, okay? So you take a step up, and conditioning takes a step up, okay? So picture it, you know, kind of like going up two sides of a mountain, and then
right.
you take a step up, and it takes a step up, and you take a step up, and it takes a step up. Okay, now, if you're just going like that, well, then you're going to get to the top of the mountain and you're going to say, now, why would I ever listen to conditioning? And so with every step up, it's got to raise the stakes, right? It's got to get more hateful. it more frightening, more threatening, more, okay, because how many of those can you go up before you realize, oh, it doesn't have any ability to control me?
Right.
And you're just going to hop up to the top of that mountain and be free, and that's not how egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate works, right? It's a very big system that lives by sucking the life force out of people. So you can just know that this is going to escalate until you think, I want to quit. But when you get to that point, what you will also know, because you've been doing awareness practice for a while now, is that it's not going to help you to quit.
Right.
All that's going to happen is the story's going to change, right? So if you decide to quit swimming, oh, my God, you coward. You chicken. You useless, worthless, spineless, yellow-bellied. Well, you deserve what happened to you. You deserve the whole thing. You're the one who quit. You didn't have to.
Uh-huh.
True?
Yeah, that's why I refused to quit. I mean, I just from the minute this started, I was like, I am not giving up.
There you go.
I'm going to try everything, but I can't
That's right.
give up.
So I'm just laying it out so that you and I know we're clear, that everybody's going to be really clear about how this process works, okay?
Right.
And so here it is. Remember in the fear book where I think the example was an elevator, right?
Yeah.
Because the person has a fear of heights, and so they're gonna start. Okay. And so you're swimming. So now let me ask you this, and this will seem like content, but it's really not. So do you need to use your toes when you swim?
Actually, no, not really. not to stay
okay.
afloat.
So, I mean, so you could actually relax your feet and your toes completely, mm-hmm. and you could swim.
Mm-hmm.
True? They become like little flippers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the next thing to find out, and this is all an experiment, right? It's all an experiment. And so I was somewhere recently, obviously at a pool, and I saw this person who was practicing something. And she had these two little, like, boogie board-looking things, and mm-hmm. she put them, one under her chest and one under her stomach. And so she mm-hmm. could just stay on top of the water, and she could practice whatever it was that she was practicing without worrying about sinking.
Right.
Yeah?
Right.
Okay.
Huh?
Is there resistance there, or is that you're with me on this?
I'm with you.
Okay. So in that way, you can find out how many leg muscles are required to swim, and you can find out what is the relationship between the muscles in your legs, your feet, and your toes.
Uh-huh.
And it's a, what happens when this? What happens when that? What if this? What if that? What if this? What if that? Okay? Until you know that you know how to do this without needing to worry about the cramp.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
And so, and I'm not a swimmer. You're a swimmer. So you know far better than I do how to do this. But my point is this. You take the power away from the voices.
Uh-huh.
You put yourself in a position of such kindness, such compassion, and understanding and support that they have no ability to do to you what they've been doing to you. Because what they're
right.
threatening is something out in the future. Your husband's not going to be there. You're going to be on
right.
your own, right? The lifeguard is going to go to the restroom, and you're going to get a cup of water, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so you're going to set this person up in such a way that she is absolutely in no danger. Now, they're going to have a lot to say about how you do that, but all that's going to happen is you get to hear how desperate they are. How
yeah.
desperate they are to make you suffer.
Yeah, I can already see that. I mean, and the thing is that, like, I'm in no danger. I know I'm in no danger because, you know, even if the lifeguard goes to the restroom, there are these lane dividers that I've been grabbing onto when I need to, and they, you know, so they're basically life-saving devices, you know, in addition to being lane dividers. And so I know rationally that there is no, that I'm not in danger of drowning.
That's right.
Yeah.
But what you're going to do with this, should you choose to do it, is to give the support to the person such that those voices have no power.
Right. Right.
Because that's what's going to create the distance so that you can really see them for what they are. They're just hateful, bullying voices. And the person that they, you know, it's as if you, you know, you were, this is a small child that we're talking about. Right? And there you are walking along, holding this child up, right? Holding the child up until there's such trust that the child can relax and just be there. That's what you're doing for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that example in the fear book about the person who's afraid of the dark and just setting them up so that they feel totally safe. You know, like if we have to go to a hotel tonight, we'll do that. We'll go to any length to make sure that you feel safe.
Whatever you need. Whatever you need. Because when we're not doing that, that's where the voices have a way in. Right? Because I am afraid, and that's just bullseye, right? got a target on you, right? But if we take out all of the elements so that there's nothing, whatever that person says, but I need water rings. All right. We'll do water rings. Yeah, whatever you need so that you can hear those voices for what they are. And begin to then focus on the sensations, relaxing the body, just the same way that you're doing the muscles in the legs, the feet, the toes. You know, you're being right there with every little nuance of it.
Okay. Yeah, I never thought about using one of those boards, but that's a great idea.
And other things will drop in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Other things will drop in for you, too. Yeah.
Well, can I ask you a question about this? So, when my husband was with me, when my husband was kind of coaching me along, and he was sort of encouraging me to, like, if my toe does start to cramp, to just try swimming through it. Because, quite honestly, it doesn't even hurt that much. It's just kind of weird and uncomfortable. and it usually goes back to normal in, like, 2 seconds. But I get what happens is when it starts to cramp, then, like, I'll immediately just stop swimming and, like, you know, go into a panic reaction. So his suggestion was, why don't you try just the next time the toe cramps, like, just keep swimming and see what happens. And if you really do have to stop, you can just grab the lane divider.
Yeah, right. And certainly, if that works and you want to try it, that's great. But it doesn't – it's not the – it's not the comfort, the support, the security. So that's that's like saying to a child, I know you're afraid of the dark, and if you get really terrified and start screaming, I'll come and turn a light on.
Okay. I can see that.
I mean, down the road, yes, that is where you want to go. You do, because that's that spirit of inquiry. You know, what happens if this? What happens with that? But that's when there's so much confidence in your willingness to be there for yourself that there's no fear or threat at all.
Right. Okay. This is great. Thank you so much.
You're going to let me know, aren't you? You will let us know. Do you know how many people are waiting to hear how this goes? A lot. All right.
Thank you,
Patty.
Okay,
take care.
Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Patty. That was a great call, Sherry. I got a lot of tips and ideas from that. And, yeah, I'll be waiting for you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Gosh, because, you know, this is, you know, Patty's situation is unique to her in terms of the content, but the process is one that we all know. And it's the reason that most people try to keep their lives small enough never to threaten those voices and just hope nothing will ever happen. But, you know, there's the proof, and we don't know anybody who's lived any length of time at all who can say, oh, yeah, nothing's ever happened to me that was challenging. So it's good for us to practice because something's going to happen, and we want to be sure that we're going to be there for ourselves in that way when it does. Then we don't have to live in fear.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Wow.
Great. Sherry, we're going to hear from our sponsor now, and then we will be right back.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart, and one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right, good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, this is Elizabeth.
Well, hi, Elizabeth. How are you doing?
I'm live to the whole world right now.
Yes. What a really good point. That's a great place to be, isn't it?
Yes, because I'm looking.
Great is a kind of a strong word.
I'm looking for some clarity.
All right. Me too, aren't we all? What's up?
I've been in a process where something fortuitous that I had been praying about came into my life in a very fortuitous kind of cosmic way. It doesn't matter what it is, but it had been an area in my life with a lot of suffering for a while. So this opportunity, this thing looked like it was going to just come into my life. Mm-hmm. And immediately I was like, I went into like my defensive mode was like, I don't want to jinx it. I don't want to jinx it. I don't want to jinx it. I'm not telling anybody. I didn't tell any of my mm-hmm. friends. I told my husband not to tell any of our friends. And I didn't let my husband show. I forbid any shows of enthusiasm or happiness. Like I was just like going, like keeping my head down to the universe. It's like, I don't want to jinx it. I don't want to jinx it. And just with that heavy, like if I do one little thing, it's going to be jinxed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a two-parter. That was the first part. So we didn't tell anybody and nobody's allowed to be told because I don't want to jinx it. And now,
okay, all right, now part two, okay, so nobody knows, all right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay, yes, okay. This is a two-parter, now it's part two.
Okay.
So this fortuitous blessing has come into my life, something that I could not get for myself by going after it linearly. God knows I tried. Mm-hmm. So somehow it's the universe sent this to me, but now some things are not perfect. There's some things about it that are scaring me, and now I can't tell anybody or let my husband tell anybody because I can't bear the thought that down the road I'll have to say it didn't work out.
And what would happen if it didn't work out? I mean, you couldn't bear it. What does that mean? Does it feel like you would die?
No, that it happened again. The whole thing happened again, and it didn't work out again. That's what I couldn't bear, that it didn't work out again. Again, I had all these hopes, and I did everything right so that everything could work out, and it didn't work out again.
And, Elizabeth, what is at stake here? Even I know that's kind of an obscure question, so let me lead the witness a little bit, okay? If it works out, does it mean that you're loved?
No.
Does it mean that you have favor with God or that you are pleasing or...
It means, like, that I'm a... If it doesn't work out, it means, like, that I'm a failure, and it means that... Once again, it got screwed up, and I couldn't make it work again.
So it's a personal statement about you. You should be able to make this work, and you can't. And so that proves something about you, that you're a failure. You're not the right person.
I guess so. I guess that's what it is.
And do you believe that that's how life works? I mean, do you believe that we have control over life?
I believe we don't have control, but I believe that after things not working out so many times, I should have learned enough to do everything right, that so it should work out, it finally work out.
So bottom line, you do believe that you can control life. If you do it right, if you do everything right, and you do it right enough, often enough, then you should be able to make it come out the way you want it to come out. And not just you, but people should. That's how life works. If we really do everything right, then, and we're the right person, which we would have to be doing everything right, then we can make life be the way we want it to be.
Yeah, and it's like that because it's all happening with shame, the process of shame going on in the background, that everyone's going to know that it didn't work out again for me. So it's not like I can... In my own, you know, the privacy of my own universe, you know, say, hey, this is life. I tried my best. It didn't work out again. But it's
And Elizabeth, do you think people would judge you?
I project they would, and I know I've probably been guilty of judging people about this issue.
Well, sure. You can see how that would be, right? Because if I am holding a belief that if I try hard enough, work hard enough, do everything right, everything perfectly, then I can make things happen that I want to have happen. And so if I look around and I see other people and they seem to be trying really hard and doing their very best and they're not getting the results that they want, then I have to conclude that there's something wrong with them, or I'm going to have to conclude that it doesn't work that way.
So
it has to be one of those, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right, well, let's say this. I want, let's see, what shall I want? I go back to a woman that I worked with years ago. And she, the only thing that she wanted in the world was to have a baby. That was the only thing that she wanted. And she couldn't. And she did everything known to humanity at the time in order to make it happen. And she could not make it happen. She just couldn't. So if I believe that I could make that happen for me, if that's what I want, and I believe it's possible to make something like that happen, if you want it bad enough, if you try hard enough, if you do everything right, then you can make that happen, then I have to conclude that she was in some way flawed, right? She was not doing everything that could have been done, or she wasn't doing it right. Because if she is doing everything right and everything that can be done and it's not working, then it might not work for me, and I can't stand that thought.
Yeah, and I think it's mostly like what you said. Well, it's doing everything right to be the right person to avoid not happening what I don't want to happen, and it's a personal reflection on me if it does happen despite everything right that I did, and projecting the double reverse projection, what everyone's going to be projecting on me when this thing didn't work out again. And mm-hmm. I feel like, and then the voice says, like, I'm a failure
mm-hmm.
again.
Of course the voice would say that. Of course. Now, you know that part, right? Of course the voice that is setting all of this up is going to say that. But, you know, Elizabeth, if you watch somebody else go through a similar process and you really did know how hard they tried, how much they put into it, just their whole heart and soul was in making this happen, doing everything right, and it didn't happen for them, wouldn't you be filled with compassion? Wouldn't you just be really sad for them?
I would, and I also have to admit publicly that I have been a real jackhole about judging people in this area, in this very specific area.
Yep, and you know what, Elizabeth? That's how we get to be humble. Yep, I was a jerk. I was a jerk. But the reason that I was a jerk, and this is what I love about awareness practice, okay? The reason I was a jerk is that I was listening to those hateful voices in my head.
Yeah.
And I don't have to do that anymore. And I'm really sorry that that happened. But if it took that for me to realize what was going on, to see how life works and to find compassion, okay. Yep. And the next time somebody comes at me and they are a complete, absolute, utter jerk, just an arrogant, judgmental, hateful jerk, what I'm going to know inside myself is, ooh, they are really in the grip of those hateful voices. But I don't have to think it has anything to do with them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. That's good clarity.
You are so welcome. You are so welcome. Take good care of her, please.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Elizabeth. Sherry, she asked for clarity, and she got it. That's great.
Isn't that great?
Wonderful.
And, and you know, the process of asking, of being willing, right? Not asking me. I mean, she was talking to me, but that's, that misses the point completely. When we are in that place of, I'm ready to see this. I want to see this. And that place of, I really want to choose compassion over the voices of ego and self-hate. When we get to that place, then the clarity is available for us. Life just drops it in. You know, it could be on something like this, like open air, or it could be something you overhear somebody saying a grocery store. But when we're there and we're ready and we're open, we're going to hear it. Just how?
Yes.
We're just lucky that way.
Yes, we are. We're very lucky.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're lucky to have time for at least one more caller here, too.
Good, good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Good evening, Sherry. This is Claire.
Well, hello, Claire. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you very much.
And, good, good. What's going on?
Well, I'm calling because of late I've been practicing speaking up when the voices tell me not to.
Oh, a very good practice, huh?
Yes. And, you know, what comes up around that is, maybe like what I'm told, is that, you know, that's vulnerable to do that. And I'm also remembering something that I think I heard you say about vulnerability and strength. And I have had the experience of speaking out about something when the voices were telling me that, you know, this was not a good thing to speak out about. And I had the experience that it was seemed to be a strength, and there was a lot of learning and empowerment for myself and others around my speaking out. And I felt really connected when I spoke out. So these are all really good things.
Yes.
But,
yes, ma'am.
And then I noticed, too, that there's a wanting to look more at vulnerability and what that means. And I'm remembering you saying that the undefended heart cannot be harmed. So that's why I've called.
So let me toss this into the mix, okay? What feels vulnerable is ego.
Huh.
So if I'm a bully and I'm going around with you through life and I'm beating you up, I'm bullying you, right? I'm saying mean things to you and kind of pushing you and shoving you, that sort of thing. And whenever anybody is around, then I act really nice and like there's just nothing going on, right? But then as soon as we're alone, and I'm pretty good at getting you alone with me, then I start beating you up again and being mean to you again, okay? And so now this is, we could also describe this as a classic abusive relationship, right? And so there you are, and you're thinking about telling somebody about this. And I say, you better not tell. You better not tell, because then everybody will know how you are. Everybody will know what kind of a person you are if you tell anybody about this. Okay? Code for you'll be really vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And, yeah. And so you tell. And everybody goes, wow, well, that's awful. That person is a bully. What a meanie. Don't go off with him anymore. You don't have to listen to that kind of stuff. You don't have to be treated that way. Okay? Are you vulnerable because you told what that hateful process was doing? No. You're strengthened. You're the one who said, "Ooh, I don't want to go along with that anymore. I don't want to collude with you anymore." Ego is really vulnerable. It's just lost power over you in a really big way.
Gee, that kind of turns the whole thing on its head somehow.
Yes. Yes. Mm. It's exactly the opposite of what we're told is true, isn't it?
It is, it is. I said to my son the other day, I said, "What does it mean to be vulnerable?" And he said, "It means all your defenses are down and you're going to get killed." Which somehow is a societal, cultural way of vulnerability.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Which is why, at that juncture, I like to think about one of my... I like to think about one of my heroes, Gandhi, mm-hmm. Who was absolutely defenseless, and by that definition, completely vulnerable, and brought one of the most powerful nations in the history of the world to a place of defeat. Or we could talk about Jesus, or we could talk about the Buddha, or we could talk, a lot of folks who didn't do any of the conventional things. Martin Luther King Jr. didn't do any of the conventional things to be powerful and strong. And yet we sense that they were more powerful and stronger than we're ever going to be in our defensiveness.
Right. And what's important for this person here is to have lots of reminders about how, when I am, quote-unquote, vulnerable.
Claire, can you speak up just a little bit more or get a little closer to the microphone? Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Go ahead. So lots of reminders.
For me, that when I am, quote-unquote, vulnerable or do things that, I'm internally told are vulnerable, that actually brings authenticity and connection. There's something for me about the connection that happens when I do speak up. Those times when I'm told, don't talk about that.
Yes. So sometimes it can be pretty magical simply to say, "Gosh, I'm feeling really vulnerable right now," or "I'm feeling a little insecure." And and what you begin to realize is, in putting that out there, you want to be judicious, right? Because there are people in the world who identified with egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate will take advantage of people if they show what's considered a weakness. But as you practice that, as you put that out there, "Gosh, I'm feeling a little insecure here," or I'm hearing some information inside my head that says that I shouldn't really talk about because that'll make me vulnerable. First of all, I would project that most of the people are going to be completely disarmed by that, right? They're going to have to restrain themselves from jumping in to take care of you and make you feel better, right? And so what you'll begin to see in that process is that saying that, owning it, is disidentification. You've stepped back from that system in order to say that. And so you're not vulnerable. You're actually in a place of strength and confidence in order to say it.
I'm letting go of all the incorrect stories around what it means to be vulnerable and what's going to happen.
Yes.
Put all that aside back to being authentic.
Exactly. And if you are authentic, it doesn't actually matter what anybody else is doing. The only reason that it ever matters what anybody else is doing is because we've left authenticity and we're in a conversation in conditioned mind about what this means and what they think and what I do and what they say and what I say and then how it, okay? As soon as we get into that conversation, we are vulnerable, but we're not vulnerable to the other person. We're vulnerable to that system that is controlling us.
Yeah. To the internal voices of self-hate and conditioning.
Yes. Yeah. Because we're identified with ego. Ego doesn't care about us, would hurt us in a second if it was to ego's advantage. And we've just made ourselves available to that. So, yes, you're right. Job one is to get disidentified as soon as possible. And talking about what's going on is one of the very best ways to do that. That's why, as you say, it's what you started out with. People are conditioned to be quiet and have as their primary and preferably only relationship the voices in their head. So just to live in that conversation, have that conversation, determine their world, that's their world view, it's what who people are, what the future is, what the past, it's the whole thing happens in this phony conversation in conditioned mind. So realizing that, you know, that where you're safest is here in the present, in the moment, in an authentic reality. That's where we're safest. So we want to get there as quickly as we can. And if talking about what's going on in the head gives us that distance, then that's a very good thing to practice.
Right. And remembering all the times that we practiced that and the what happens, you know, the benefits, the alignment with life and how that feels.
Yes. Yeah, it's wonderful. The heart opens and you know that you're safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Whatever happens.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank
you so much.
You
Jerry.
Did it. You are so welcome. You get to put this in your teacup.
Oh yes, I do.
Yeah. You saw through a bamboozle.
I'm gonna have
into the teacup.
I'm gonna put two things.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you, Claire. Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Claire. And Sherry, we are 2 minutes to the hour here.
All right. I think that's probably close enough for Buddhist work. What do you think?
Yes.
I know we have some people on the East Coast who are saying, yeah, but where we are, it's 2 minutes till 9 o'clock. So, and then, of course, there are those folks in Europe. Oh, well, I mean, it just goes on and on, doesn't it? So I think we're good, Michael. I sure appreciate it, as always. And I look forward to talking with you next week.
Me too. Thank you so much, Sharon.
All right. Thanks. Good night.
Good night.